This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius. These are the Londinium Chronicles. Thankfully, Germanicus is home safe from his adventure to the edges of the empire, where he was welcomed by the centurions and kept safe, despite his effort to be risky on the roads. However, he's back in Londinium. We're far from Rome, happily. And we're reflecting on the events of the 21st century. We can set aside the events of our century, the first century AD, although there will be a moment for us to draw on our education. What does a Roman equus class gentleman learn in school these days? Everything about the Gracchi brothers, the Sulla rising, the Catiline conspiracy, Caesar, the murder of Caesar, all the way up to the first princeps. That's what we're drilled with. That's why we live there. That's why we promote it, because it's what we were given as children to understand why the emperor is so successful, why the empire is so critical, why our empire and not another empire. However, we're going to apply that lesson later on. We begin with events in the 21st century. Germanicus, there's much in the field that suggests that the Americans, while generally uninformed that they're building on the foundation of Rome, are following, well, you know the phrase, history doesn't repeat, but sometimes it rhymes. The rhyme that I most enjoy is the ultimatums issued by the emperor, sometimes called the president, for the gangsters in Gaza and for the gangsters in Caracas. There's no other way to identify this than, well, Caracas, for example, it occurs to me that the emperor is taking advantage of the little set piece that Pompey prospered with when he suppressed the Cilician pirates with his navy. And the ultimatum against the Gazan gangsters reminds me again and again about how emperors don't negotiate. There's not a trade-off. When they issue an ultimatum, that's the deal. And what comes behind it is the hammer blow. I believe the 20th century has some sense of it, but I'm not sure. There's a lot of hesitation to recognize this is straightforward power. Now, I come to you also not just to comment on princeps, Trump, but also that Putin has the same power. And it's not generally understood that when he issues an ultimatum or when he puts in motion an aggression, it must be answered by weaker states. For example, the harassing of the Western Europeans, especially the NATO frontier, with, this is an allegation, I'm not in a courtroom here, I'm more Ciceronian than I am, Perry Mason. But in any event, the allegation by a number of EU leaders that the Russians are using drones to harass us and to intimidate us. There was an emergency meeting in Copenhagen on Thursday last, chaired by the Prime Minister of Denmark, who heretofore has been quite dovish. It was attended by all the major powers, including the President of France. The Prime Minister of Britain came, and they were discussing what is to be done with something they've created called a drone wall in their minds. They want to put up a drone wall, similar for the Great Wall of China, similar for walling off a besieged city. I don't know where they're going with this, but most important to me, for you to comment on, to my reading, not only did the U.S. not chair the meeting, it was not a principal contributor to the results of the meeting, and there was no rush to the White House for a comment on the drone wall. Is that a success of our princeps, Mr. Trump, or is that Europe ignoring the power of the empire? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. I feel that we have different eras to call on for comparison to what is happening in the American empire of the 21st century. And in some ways, the approach that Mr. Trump is taking as princeps or basileus, if you prefer, is the approach that was taken by the Roman emperor in Constantinople after the fall of the Western Empire. And there was only one Roman Empire at that point, and only one capital, and that was Constantinople. And much of what Mr. Trump is doing now is very reminiscent of how the emperor, the Roman emperor in Constantinople, dealt with the new barbarian kingdoms that were emerging in Italy or in what we now call France, which had been Gaul and became Francia when it was taken over by the Franks, the Visigothic kingdom in Spain, and the Burgundian kingdom, the Vandalic kingdom. Those that were enemies, Rome overthrew. But those that were allied, Rome used to the extent that they could and sought to, again, as best they could, manipulate relations between the kingdoms, the new kingdoms, and the emperor, who still was the top man, the princeps. And this is an approach that feels similar, in which the American emperor in Washington treats with the allies now, not as though they were directly a part of the empire anymore, but are still considered as lesser rulers, lesser regia, kingdoms that are subservient to Washington, but not necessarily under our control. So this is a distancing that still preserves the fact that the U.S. is the leader and the empire is still intact, but it's not necessarily directly administered anymore. And that is a very interesting shift that's occurring. And it's occurring in large part because the U.S. has two objectives that are in conflict. One is to remain the leader of not just the free world, but to the extent possible of the known world, and to maintain the sway of Romanitas. But at the same time, it doesn't want to be tied down or dragged down by the affairs of these lesser allied kingdoms. And so the goal is to maintain this titular supremacy, which is what Constantinople did in late antiquity, and at the same time not to get too sucked into the affairs of various Lombard dukes or Frankish kings, unless absolutely necessary. And so I see this as a reordering, because the Roman Empire did reorder itself at the end of the 5th century, and it this is the way it did it. So the idea was that it was still the empire, and these new kingdoms were still a part of the empire, kingdoms of the empire, as it were, but not directly ruled. And this is funny, because one of the ways that Constantinople did that is that the emperor would bestow titles, Roman titles, on these barbarian kings. So, for example, when Clovis was crowned in 511 as king of the Franks, there were Byzantine envoys there who appointed him as a Roman consul, a lesser office than emperor, obviously, and also patricius, as in patrician, and many other titles, all of which identified and solidified his legitimation by Constantinople, but also his subordination to the Roman emperor. And the Franks remained loyal allies of Constantinople for the next almost two centuries.
Yes, no one No one is entertaining the idea that this meeting in Copenhagen was a break with the PRINCAPs. No way.
Right.
And the PRINCAPs is busy in fortifying his redoubts. That would be Fortress America. But there were no sharp words, where's the U.S., as we heard in the early days.
Right.
It was clear that the PRINCAPs is no longer interested in sustaining NATO, regarding it as an artifact of the 20th century, not useful in the 21st century.
Right. And it's a deep truth that hasn't been revealed to the American people, is that Europe is not threatened by Russia. Europe is doing what it's doing because it wants to distract its increasingly restive electorates with a bigger threat. And they have to manufacture that threat, and yet they can't turn that threat into a war. So what they're doing instead is creating incredible paranoia in European populations. So, for example, in Denmark, after this alleged drone incursion from the sea, Danes are buying emergency rations and bug out packs and tents and who knows what, you know, and it's a way to distract European electorates from the crisis that is overtaking Europe.
Also to move the money through the legislature.
Yes.
For the defense industry. Yes, they're going to build. Now, a detail about what's happened. And the Centurions who are listening to us, we're going to get to you guys, okay? We're dealing with a transfer of power that's underway. I want to speak to NATO just a moment, Germanicus, because I've been reading. You know, it's always dangerous to read 20th century history. I've been reading about, you will smile when I use this name, a man named Robert McNamara. See, I knew you'd smile. Yes. Robert McNamara's idea of why he committed this empire with what you'd have to say is a creative president, very creative, was that that there was substance to the domino theory that Eisenhower had first voiced in the Cold War. The reason I mention these things is NATO was an invention to make those who participated in it feel safe. It was based upon complete fantasy, complete arbitrary fantasy. If Vietnam fell, so would Cambodia and Thailand and Laos. And if they fell, so would Japan. They actually said this. So
I
would
know.
The Philippines. And if they fell, so would Turkey. Honest, that's something that McNamara advanced to Johnson. Germanicus, the Americans are doing very well right now. But they've had some bad moments in the last several hundred years, and that has to be one of them.
Well, the domino theory was part of the former American empire, which did seek to create a global imperium eventually when the Soviet Union and the other threats were vanquished. And we failed to do that. And so we're retrenching. And a lot of this is about retrenchment, creative retrenchment.
I didn't want to any longer allow the Centurions to think that we think NATO was real. It was based upon arbitrary arguments such as I just gave you. I'm not making this up. McNamara said Japan would fall if Vietnam fell. He believed
the domino theory is still around, but it has been narrowed down or necked down to a much smaller group of adherents called neoconservatives. But back in the day, Eisenhower and Kennedy and Johnson, et cetera, it was the reigning ideology of the United States.
Well, it's as if they came up with a defense from Juno the trickster. Good heavens. All right. One other detail comes to me as I'm, again, I apologize for reading 20th century history, but every once in a while it comes your way. That they never used the word Russia, nor China, nor Vietnam. They said communists.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't realized before reading it again, because these are quotes from their meetings. Much of that is now available that wasn't in the 20th century, you know, things are coming clear. I think because the generation that fought the Vietnam War is dying. Not the men who led it, but the men who fought it, the grunts. That communism was communist this, communist that. They covered up the fact that they were dealing with, in Vietnam, an agrarian peasant population. There was nothing to bomb. Or every once in a while, they would realize bombing an oil depot in Hanoi isn't going to do anything to intimidate the Viet Cong in the jungles of I Corps. Nothing. No connection whatsoever. Every once in a while, they'd say that, but they wouldn't take it into account. And they used the word communist as opposed to Vietnamese or North Vietnamese.
There was a reason for that, and that is that there had to be some specter.
Yes,
so vast and so dark and so evil that, of course, we had to mobilize our society. Of course, we had to run Europe and Japan. And what we're doing today is very different, as we'll discuss. And that is, the threat is no longer this gigantic, looming colossus. The threat is terrorism, gangsters, anarchic groups out there who wish to hurt America. And that is a sign that the great power verities have shifted. And
the gangsters. The Salesian pirates. Just a moment. I wanted you to come. For the Centurions now will enjoy this.
About the Salesian pirates.
Yes, the Salesian pirates were a trouble to trade. And we have versions of them. Think of the drug running in the Caribbean and the cruise missiles fired into the Red Sea tankers by the so-called Houthis. We have versions of pirates today, and there doesn't seem to be an effective method of dealing with them other than violence.
Right. Well, I mean, the Romans never made that their primary threat, just as they didn't make slave revolts a primary threat. Because they had bigger fish to fry for a long time. And throughout the empire, there was Persia. There was the great other superpower. Yes. But today, that superpower is only China. And so when it comes to these, frankly, not as threatening places, which includes Russia, we have to create a different kind of threat vector. And that's where the whole terrorist gangster thing comes in, you know, because Putin is not described as we would have described Stalin in 1951.
No.
In the Korean War. It's all Putin the gangster. And that's why the shadow fleet is seen as some sort of a criminal enterprise, like Spectre in the James Bond movies. You know, Putin is like the greatest of international criminals, followed by all of these others, including the so-called president of Venezuela right now. And it's the way we started this in Vietnam, but Vietnam could not be seen as gangster. It had to be seen as a kind of a nefarious arm of this greater blackness, like World War II, Hitler. But today, it's much more useful for the U.S., and this has been true since the Bosnian, Kosovo, all of that, and then to 2001, 9/11, the idea that the U.S. empire is threatened by evil criminals. And therefore, we can show our power by putting them down. And it's the same, it requires the same kind of huge defense effort, but it's directed at a different kind of enemy for very important political narrative reasons.
We're dealing with foreign threats. Let us go to domestic threats. Germanicus, Gaius, we're in Londinium by the Thames. It's fall now. The leaves have changed and dropping off. We're getting ready for winter here in Londinium. Things are very well. We hear rumors from Rome of unhappiness, but the Senate's always happy. We're going to discuss that in just a moment, because we're turning to an event that happened in these last days that is strikingly reminiscent of the lives that we've lived. The emperor ordered the legions and their leadership to attend remarks that he and his viceroy made about the mission of the empire. The gathering, which was a sea of ribbons, badges, and uniforms, Quantico, Virginia. Everything that a Roman emperor could want, all of them sitting in front of you. And he terrified them. It's when we come back.